kidnap and grab it, and don't give a hoot. Break up me heart is yo-ho. Yo-ho, yo-ho, a pirate's life for me.
Welcome to another episode of the Pirate Monk Podcast. Coming to you live from high atop the Mellow Mushroom in Franklin, Tennessee. I'm your host, Nate Larkin, here with our fearless engineer and navigator, Mondo Grimes, and live via satellite.
Studio B.
From Studio B in San Luis Obispo, California, Admiral Aaron Porter.
Wow, a new name. This is good.
Yeah.
All of this is better than the porn pastor, so I appreciate that a lot. Thank you very much.
And with us here today, in the studio,
live and in person,
none other than Scott and Christine Dente, known the world over as Out of the Gray.
Well, at least in Middle America, I don't know about the world over. We were pretty popular in the Midwest in the mid '90s, but that's about as far as it went.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think we got recognized at a mall once.
I think we're big in Japan.
We're huge in Japan now.
Are you really? Oh. Yeah. That's nice.
You and Tom Waits. There you go.
Yeah. When pastors from California aren't busy ripping our CDs into their collection.
Really?
Yeah. Well, as long as it came from someone in the worship team, I felt like we're keeping it in the body of Christ. I said no to the black market kid on the corner that was hawking Out of the Gray CDs that he had ripped. I said no.
That's I'm wondering, out of that vast archive of classic Out of the Gray material, have we got a killer song we can
open? Yes, we do. We have several, actually.
All right. Mondo, pick one.
Here we go.
We don't say much when we're around each other. I wish you'd tell me how you feel. We do so much dancing around each other. Want to reach out and pull me in. Over, I will see you
Hey, welcome back to the Pirate Monk Podcast. That is one of my favorite Out of the Gray songs. Well done. Tell us a little bit more about it.
That was actually our first release. It was the first song that we ever heard on the radio. We had our That Thing You Do moment where we were driving down Hillsborough Avenue and heard that song on the radio.
Wow.
I don't think we shrieked and went crazy because we were driving in a car, but it was actually a pretty cool moment. It was 1991.
Wow.
The golden age of Christian radio.
Wow.
So how long had you guys been married at that point?
At that point, how long have we been married? Well, that's some...
Yeah.
There's some trigonometry involved there.
Four years.
4 years. Yeah. So, and that's... So it's coming on 23 now.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Holy smokes. Well, we're going to dig into that. We want to find out, during the interview portion of the show, how these guys have managed to stay married and in community.
Yeah.
Yes,
all right,
indeed.
Cool.
All right, well, we got some meeting thoughts here. Did you go to your meeting this week, Mr. Nate Larkin?
I did. I did. I think it's 4 weeks running now.
Okay.
I actually made it to the Franklin Monday night meeting.
That's a pretty good streak, man.
Oh, I'm loving it.
And Mondo, you can give Nate his membership card back at
yes,
the end
okay.
of
I will,
this
will do.
Podcast.
Will do. So what was the topic this week, man?
Oh, it was good. Although, you know, I had kind of like, oh, crap moment when the topic was announced. Because the guy who was leading went straight theological this time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he picked as the topic, holiness.
Does everybody groan when the topic at the Franklin meeting still? It seems no matter what the topic is.
People groan.
People groan.
Yeah. I definitely did some groaning. Yeah. I can tell you that. Because to me, that's such a loaded word. It comes. It was so heavily freighted during my childhood. Because as you guys know, I was raised in the holiness tradition. Gave me a lot of things I'm grateful for, along with some baggage I wish I didn't have. So anyway, my sharing was went kind of along these lines. I think all of us are natural Pharisees. I think we come into the world with a desire to be morally superior to those around us. I think we congratulate ourselves and quiet our conscience by telling ourselves that we might not be perfect, but we're better than average, and we're certainly better than that guy. And in me, that impulse runs so deep that even something as good as recovery is spiritually dangerous. It's crazy, but success against my besetting sin can actually, if my heart is not right, carry me away from God and alienate me from my neighbors that I'm supposed to love. Because it's easy for me, if I'm having success against my besetting sin, to start to imagine that I really am better than other people and that I'm getting this holiness thing licked.
I grew up in a church that was very concerned about what it took to become a Christian.
Right.
We wanted to convert a lot of people, so we had that part down. But nobody ever taught us what it was to be a Christian. And it's a very big difference.
Yeah.
What's the difference between looking more Christian, which is what we do so much in church, and that becomes holiness, and what it is to actually be more Christian? What does it mean that I've reckoned the gospel? What does it mean that I am a new creature? And I totally agree that the greatest gravitational pull in all of our lives is to become a Pharisee.
To make
it easier in that way.
Sorry, I think to hear Nate talk about holiness and to have the description of holiness, you know, one of them to be set apart, is to even speak into, well, then I'm set apart now.
Yeah.
And as Nate said, if not better than someone, at least not as bad as that guy.
Yeah.
You know,
that guy.
Yeah. Even in the context of a meeting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would find myself sitting in there and comparing and contrasting stories, even as I'm bringing, you know, my whole self into that scenario, find myself weighing myself against the other four or five guys in my breakout group.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah. You know, it's crazy. You know, in the religious world of Jesus' day, There were two classes of people. There were the righteous and there were the sinners. And the righteous took very seriously God's command to be holy as I am holy, but they defined that in terms of outward performance. And they were very, very good at it and scrupulous. You know, they didn't just observe the Ten Commandments. They had 600 amendments. But Jesus said that they were like the people who wash the outside of the cup and leave the inside dirty. They were like whitewashed tombs full of dead men's bones. He said that they neglected the weightier matters of the law. So even though their behavior could not be criticized, you know, they were legalistic but not just. For all their almsgiving, they were not compassionate. They were not loving. And the great irony is that they did all this to please God, but when God showed up, they crucified him. In Samson, we talk a lot about self-examination. It's one of the skills that we have to learn during the while we're on the path. yeah, Aaron.
Well, no, finish what you were saying,
yeah.
And then I'll jump in.
But here's the thing. If I really believe, and I grew up believing that, okay, holiness comes to me. I can't achieve holiness. That has to be given to me by God. But I'm required to maintain it. He gives me this white robe. I've got to keep it clean. And my acceptance before God and my access to God is based upon, you know, my success in maintaining this holiness that came to me on the day I prayed the prayer. If that's the case, then real self-examination is just too frightening, because every failure is potentially fatal. So what I'll do is I'll count as sins those behaviors that I can control, and I'll sweep the others under the rug, tuck them under the bed, put them in the closet. I can't look at them because the consequences of failure are too great. That's why, for me, recovery has to remain Christ-centered. And I have to be aware every day that holiness is never mine. It belongs to Christ Jesus. And God is daily doing for me what I cannot do for myself. And it's only when I have a daily awareness of my own shortcomings, my own sins and failures, when every day I'm recognizing that the effects of the fall run deep and that no part of me is untouched, only then, when I'm receiving forgiveness in a steady stream because I'm admitting my sin, can I give that forgiveness away to other people. And only then is it possible for me to live in community as a man among men without trying to take over.
Well, now we have given the quintessential example of talking about something conceptually, philosophically, and theologically.
Ah.
All important stuff.
Yeah.
So, Nate, what did you actually personally feel about anything about holiness
great
on Monday?
Great question, Aaron. And I want to remind our listeners that all of this is kept in strictest confidence.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Know, yeah. Let me just say this. I did get very personal in my group with four guys who I trust. And they're holding what I said in strictest confidence. So what I've shared is preamble, and I did get specific.
There you go.
Fair enough. We'll take
it. Well done, Aaron, keeping the man on the carpet.
Yeah. So we got some mail. I'm always excited to hear about mail. So what do we got in there, Mr. Nate?
Mail! Mail! All right. Well, let me see.
Now, my question is, did it come to the P.O. box or did it come to the email?
People are still emailing. That P.O. box, man, is just sitting there.
We might need to get rid of that thing, man. This
but
is
that's
nobody...
where you pick up the checks, right? At the P.O. box.
Yeah. That's it.
And gifts. You know,
and gifts.
Gifts, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Here's one that's a little distressing, and we need to talk about this together. This came from Paul in New Zealand. He says, "Hi, Nate. Read your book. It was great. Your story was so helpful to hear. I've also tried the website, but I found it unhelpful. And I've not really made any new friends there who I can develop a meaningful relationship with for accountability. I realize it's difficult. I live in New Zealand, not in the U.S. Is there any other way I could make use of the site? To be honest, I'm quite desperate for some companionship and understanding." Hope you are well. Regards, Paul. What do we, my heart aches for this guy out there, south of the equator, feeling very much alone, and running into the limitations of virtual brotherhood.
Wow.
Right?
But it's such a beautiful place.
It is, of course. And the hobbits are there.
Yeah,
and everything.
So he must be okay on many levels.
Yeah. Well, I think we should go to New Zealand.
That's what I think.
I think that's the solution.
Bring the brotherhood.
Bring the brotherhood to Paul.
To Paul.
Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Next
letter. I wish I had known, because one of our pastor pirates just spent all summer in New Zealand with the navigators doing work there. He could have hooked up with Paul. They could have had a meeting.
Oh, man.
Yeah, whatever happened with the idea of a Skype meeting? That was discussed a long time ago. Or some kind of actual video virtual meeting for guys like Paul and those who are, you know, around the country but isolated.
Oh, you know, I think we are waiting for the apostle of Skype, whoever that is, to set that up.
Wait, right. I want to speak to the letter.
Okay, speak to the letter.
This is Scott.
Okay.
I think Paul needs to get brave, and Paul needs to go set up shop in a cafe, like our dear friend Nate did.
Yeah.
And Paul needs to start fishing for brothers that have a need, and putting out little tidbits, talking to men, putting out little tidbits of his story, and the guys that whose eyes get big and get up and walk out, they're not the guys, but the guys that sit down or the guys that say, "Hey, can we go for a walk?" Those might be the beginning of his guys.
Oh,
Paul needs to get brave.
Yeah.
Because this is a real need. This is not going to be solved by the internet, this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. I definitely agree with that. It's something about that person-to-person interaction that just through virtual world, you can't get the same connection.
Yeah.
And I totally agree with that.
All right. So, Paul, that's our advice. We'll pray for you, and our advice is get out the door, share your story, start talking with guys. I will tell you this, Paul. I've shared my story with one-on-one with hundreds of guys, and I haven't yet met a man who didn't identify with it. Even though their stories are different, even though many of them, their struggle is nowhere near mine. And even if a guy isn't ready to be as honest with you as you are with him, you've given him an invitation, you've planted a seed, and what I've found is that very often, months or years later, the phone will ring or the guy will stop by the table and say, you know, we talked all that time ago. Can we talk again? All right.
Well, hey, before we move on real quick, because what has just been given to Paul is a... I mean, this takes time. Takes a lot of cultivation.
Yeah.
So as far as using the actual site, I think finding a partner or two that you can be connecting with, and you say, look, this is what I'm trying to do. I need to check in with you so there's not a huge gap of isolation between that. I think that's a way to use the site. And if you want to, you can email Scott Dente at sexyscott@hotmail.com. And he'll... Okay.
What? Wow, that's so good that these things are editable, isn't it?
Really?
Well, I do have a question, though. I mean, is Paul the only guy in New Zealand? I mean, is there any other guys on the site?
In New Zealand.
In New Zealand.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one fair question to ask.
That's a good question. And if I were online at this moment, if the satellite feed weren't occupied by Aaron Porter, I could go on site.
Yeah.
I wonder, it might be there.
Yeah,
it's
we can let's do that on break.
Okay,
let's do that on break and find out, because we might be able to connect him with someone in New Zealand.
All right,
how big is New Zealand?
It's about the size of Delaware, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's worth a shot. I don't know. I mean, you know, it's worth a shot. I mean, it's worth a shot and find out.
Okay. Well, here's another letter from a guy named Eddie. He says, I found your site via another site called Men of Jesus. By the way, I checked out Men of Jesus. Not a bad site. Nice guys. Doing some good work. And there are some variations of that. They're a little strange, different sites, but I liked this one. I've been downloading and listening to the podcast, found them to be informative and inspirational. I've since bought the book, Samson and the Pirate Monks, and desire to start a Samson group here in northern Michigan. I've remained sober since the first part of the year when I completed a course online called The Way of Purity. However, I have still not confessed to my wife, even though I've confessed to several other brothers. I feel like I should tell her, but I'm afraid of what will result, and I wonder if my desire to confess is just to ease my burden. It's been very freeing bringing this sin into the open, discovering that I'm not alone. Below is the confession I penned while taking the above-mentioned course at Setting Captives Free. I need some advice on how to proceed. Here's a copy of what I plan to tell my wife. You listening, Christine?
I'm listening.
Okay. He gives his wife's name. I'm not going to give her name. I hope you've noticed the changes that God's been making in my life. Over the past several months, he's shown me that my focus must be to serve him, and my desire is to do that full time. He's revealed to me that there are sins in my past, and that I must bring sins in my past that I must bring into the light first in order to move forward. I've confessed them to him, and he's forgiven me, and the Holy Spirit has directed me to ask your forgiveness. You know my past involvement in pornography. I don't want to water it down, nor do I want to unload on you. I love you more than I can even say. I always have and always will. I never wanted to hurt you, and I'm asking for your forgiveness. I know it'll take time to regain your trust and respect. That said, I have to confess that I have secretly viewed pornography on and off for a while. I take full responsibility and 100% of the blame for my actions. I'm asking for your forgiveness for bringing it into our home and marriage. I dragged you into my sin early on in our marriage by bringing pornography into our home, when in fact I should have been protecting you from it. And for that, I'm deeply sorry, and I deeply regret it. I've tried often to stop the desire for it on my own, but as you know, it had a way of creeping back into our home. There are many times when God was prompting me to confess to you, but my pride always seemed to get in the way. It's important to me that I stop this generational curse now. At the beginning of this year, I joined an online group called the Men of Jesus, where I found several Christian men who've been very supportive of me. They told me about a website called Setting Captives Free, which is the website I was using for the Bible study. The Bible study I completed over 60 days is called The Way of Purity, a course in overcoming addiction to pornography by focusing on Jesus. The course opened my heart to the fact that the emphasis I place on sexual desire is actually an idol. Through this course, and through the accountability of a Christian guy named Jim, and with the Holy Spirit's guidance, I can now say that my desire is to focus on Christ, and the desire for viewing pornography has gone away. In addition to your forgiveness, I'm asking for your help and support. I don't want to ever go back to the man I once was. I want to be the husband God created me to be for you. This is a sin of self-centeredness. I've been selfish. I ask your forgiveness for that as well. Over the past several months, I've come to truly love you even more than ever. I want you to know that it's Christ who completes us. He's been missing from our marriage, and for that, too, I take 100% responsibility. So Eddie says, I know you guys are busy, and if you aren't able to give any advice, I'll understand. Nate, thank you for you, and I thank God for you and your willingness to be open and honest. Many men have been set right with God by what you've done. I pray that God will use my life and my painful testimony to set other men free from the captivity of the habitual sin of pornography, much like he's used yours. Why don't we ask the girl in the room?
I agree.
Yeah.
Wow. I just have to say wow, though.
Yeah.
Before.
Any reaction from the female side of the spectrum? I understand all women are different, but what suggestions would you give to Eddie?
Well, I'd start in general. I would say that Scott and I have talked about this and what personally I might want to hear or not want to hear, you know, as far as from my husband, past sins or ongoing sins. I think for me, I would want a careful consideration before, you know, I got details from my husband.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, listening to this terrific confession and you know, outpouring of love and putting away of pride, I think everything he said would enhance their relationship. I can't hear anything in there that would make me think, oh, she doesn't need to know that. All that was really good stuff, but not too specific, I don't think.
I love the fact that he didn't just load her down with a bunch of specifics, images that she's going to carry in her heart and mind for the rest of her life.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
It sounds like a
second draft. This sounds like something that it's not off the top of his head. Yeah. It's been worked on. I would think that I see Aaron's hand. We see that hand, Pastor. I would want him to read this to her and not hand this to her.
Mm.
It's long, and it's really well thought out, and so I think it should come in his voice, in his presence, and not be something that she just reads. But I do think, instead of trying to memorize it and say, I would actually just think that, Eddie, I think that you should read it to her. You started off with saying, I hope you've noticed the way that God has been working on me or how I've changed, something like that. And that to me is kind of the key to the whole thing. I hope she's noticed as well, because, you know, one thing I know from my wife is I'm a man of many words. They're my currency, and I spend them fairly freely. And so you want to be this. You don't want to just talk about this. So I hope she's noticed as well before you give this to her. Also, I think you could maybe elaborate a little bit about, I mean, this is a wonderful confession. Your repentance is the kind of man you want, that you are becoming. I think you could elaborate a little bit more, instead of just saying, I want to be a godly man in our home. I would want to hear a little bit more about who that man is and who you're becoming as well. You know, the vision that you have for yourself and your family should be a shining vision that you are moving towards. And I think the language of the vision could be a little bit less spiritual and a little more personal. Those are some of just the things that I'm hearing in it. But I'm blown away by this confession. I love it.
Excellent stuff.
I totally agree with the reading it out loud. I think that'll make it so much more powerful. And there's a couple things that I've seen just in counseling couples when this comes up. One is guys to understand that we've thought and talked with one another a lot about this, but for our wives, this is like very fresh and new and confusing. So, you know, even when we have something as well thought out and as well planned out as this, we can be surprised by a reaction that's a lot of pain on the part of our wives. And we need to be ready to extend a lot of grace and patience for whatever she needs to go through, whatever she needs to feel. We need to let her feel it. And the other thing that seems to be a consistent trap is this, that most women immediately feel that this is a reflection on them. This is all about them. I wasn't pretty enough. I wasn't beautiful enough. I wasn't sexy enough. I didn't like sex enough. So you went there. This is all a reflection of my failure. To which the man often says, no, this has nothing to do with you. Because for a lot of men, they look at pornography and they're actually more turned on. They want more sex than their wife. They're objectifying her even more. So the idea that it's about her deficiency doesn't connect with them. So we've got a husband saying it's not about you, a wife feeling it's all about her, and both parties need to understand that both are right. We can't say as men, this is not about you. It absolutely is. We've made it about them, and we need to take responsibility for that, that we've brought other women in, we've objectified them, we've gone to a safer place, because honestly, I love pornography because it's safer than intimacy with my wife. I can feel rejected
That's good,
by my wife. I'm not safe there.
Yeah.
And I can be completely safe if I just click on this and look at a woman, and man, I know what she's thinking.
Yeah.
She totally wants me.
Yeah.
She loves me in the way I want to be loved. So it is about my wife. So I need to take responsibility for that and not just hand my wife back a line about, no, it's not about you.
Yeah.
So just be ready for the whole package, because this is a good confession, but it's only a first step.
Yeah, that's good, Aaron.
And yet I would say part of that package could also be her response being, oh, great, this hasn't been about me. I've understood this. I've felt this underlying current, something's wrong, but you telling me these things actually sets me free to say, okay,
yeah.
Some of this, a lot of this is just about you, and I can be set free with doing my own work about stuff that is about me, because now it's not so enmeshed and entangled in what is about you and what is your work.
Yeah, boy, I hope, Eddie, I hope your wife gets freed in exactly that way.
All right, and we will be right back on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Oh, pirate's life is a wonderful life, a roving over the sea. Give me a career as a buccaneer, it's the life of a pirate for me. Oh, the life of a pirate for me.
Welcome back to the Pirate Monk Podcast. We are having, is this the first time we're having the book corner with
no.
Nate Larkin?
We have discussed books in the past. Yeah,
like episode
shows
three.
You how much I've listened to the podcast.
Right. Shows how much Aaron has actually listened to the podcast.
Well, I'm a subscriber now. It's okay.
Yeah. Probably
well, anyways,
his own book.
Yeah.
I've recently read a book called Hamlet's Blackberry, and Nate, I want you to fill me in on what I read. Because okay. I don't remember.
Well, I'll tell you this, Aaron. I didn't actually read Hamlet's Blackberry. I intend to. I'm going to purchase it. I don't know if I'll even purchase it. I might sit at Barnes & Noble and read it.
This is very confusing.
But I have a good friend named Ed Chin who did read the first 29 pages of Hamlet's Blackberry. And on page 29...
Wait a second. What's this all about now?
I got this great...
Who's the author?
The author is William Powers.
Mr. Powers, this is Scott. I'm going to read this book for your sake. I'm so sorry for my friends.
Just so you know, I got a guy on the worship team that'll burn you a copy of the book.
Exactly.
All right, the full title of the book is Hamlet's Blackberry, A Practical Philosophy for Building a Good Life in the Digital Age. Published by Harper in 2010. The book asks this question: how do we use the wonder but subdue the addictive nature of technology and live a good life?
Hold on. Say that again, because that was too much for my brain to keep up with at this hour.
How do we use the wonder but subdue the addictive nature of technology and live a good life? So in a chapter titled Busy, Very Busy, Powers says this. He says, the more connected we are, the more we depend on the world outside to tell us how to think and live.
Hmm.
So my friend Ed Chin got blogging on this thing. It set him off on a whole tangent. And I loved what he wrote. Ed wrote, why should I be goaded toward opinions by people and energy centers that I do not know? I have my own work, my own interests and pursuits. It doesn't matter to me what Rush Limbaugh, Nancy Pelosi, Steve Jobs, Sarah Palin, or Oprah or Osteen think. I'm certainly not going to let them tell me who or what to hate, love, fear, buy, smoke, or believe. They are outside of me. I'm very particular about who gets a key to my mind and heart. And yet, he says, the sheer volume of voices can make you begin to wonder, should I feel or think something about this? Ed says, the strangest thing to me is that anger seems to have become the main gauge of intelligence, responsibility, and even Christian faith. It's like if you're really an adult, then you have to be mad at hell as someone, some idea, some institution, some event, or something. Why? Again and again, the Bible says that God is slow to anger. And James says that we should be slow to anger too. Why is it difficult to connect those dots? He closes with this. A few years ago, Bob Beckel and Cal Thomas wrote a book called Common Ground. One of their themes was that strong economic interests have made a science of polarization and anger. They know how to produce rage. Good grief, they're professionals. That is their business. Of course, they've purchased the best technologies. And yet, we let them implant their electrodes into our heart. So to me, that's the best reason to unplug, at least for certain boundaries or seasons. I resonated with that because I have found you know, especially during the seasons of active addiction in my life, I distracted myself very much from what was going on in my own heart just by importing the anger of other people and externalizing all the problems, obsessing over what was wrong outside of me and not dealing with what was going on inside. What does this prompt in your mind, Aaron?
What I'm going to say right now is absolutely descriptive, not prescriptive.
Okay.
This is where I'm at. I don't watch the news or listen to the media for a couple reasons. One, that in the history of mankind, we haven't had access to the pain and issues of people globally.
Yeah.
We were in our villages and our cities. We could actually care about the people around us. Now we've brought in all these things that I'm supposed to feel for the pain of the entire planet.
Yeah.
I might just be very small in my emotional capacity, but I can't care about the people around me deeply when I'm caring deeply about stuff I will never have anything to do with globally.
Wow.
So I shut off the news. I mean, it took me 2 weeks to even find out there was an earthquake in Haiti. And for some people, they say, well, that's really irresponsible. Or some people say, how can you engage in conversation with other people? To which I would say, actually, I can engage better than them because I don't actually have an opinion going into the conversation, so I can talk and listen to another person that I'm face-to-face with versus simply having my opinion from Rush Limbaugh in place. Now I can't have a conversation.
Yeah.
So I totally agree with what he said about shutting it off and being present in the relationships you have, because even what the news is telling me to care about, it's only that which they've chosen as newsworthy. Nobody talks about influenza. More people are dying of influenza than 100 other things that they're going to put out. It's just not interesting anymore. So there are ways that we can choose where we put our heart and our emotional energy instead of letting the media choose for us. And I think that's being responsible with our lives.
That's pretty radical. I do want to say you are one of the most uninformed, compassionate people I've ever met. It's a wonderful thing.
I feel nothing but good about what you just said.
I know. Scott, I want to ask you this because you're a technology guy. I mean, you aren't you?
Well, yeah.
I think of you as a technology
guy.
Well,
I'm a geek.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just a computer geek from way back.
Yeah.
This is the first time, time I've thought about connectivity being a temptation towards anger.
Mm.
And it's right there in front of us. I get it. I mean,
yeah.
But this is the first time I've actually confronted that idea. And it's kind of blowing my mind a little bit because it's of the truth of it.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to be mad as hell about a lot of stuff.
Right.
When I find that I'm not,
I
feel stupid.
Yeah.
Uninformed.
Right.
Kind of like Aaron.
Yeah.
I feel
Wow.
Sorry, I just went there.
No.
No, I feel so when I'm like I said, when I'm not, I feel disconnected
even though
I'm one of the most connected people.
Yeah.
I'm fine I find that it was strange. I was on Christine's Facebook yesterday. We were actually sitting on the couch next to each other, bantering on Facebook a little bit. It was funny.
Yeah.
And but what I noticed later when I went back and looked at a list of comments, there were people commenting from not every chapter, but completely distinct chapters of her life. Her college roommate was one of them.
Yeah.
Somebody that we traveled with on tour was another person.
Yeah.
People that have never, and I thought, how odd and almost wrong. Like, why is it that all of these worlds are colliding? We can't contain all of this connection.
Yeah.
I'm finding this to be a very, very strange time.
Yeah.
And as I watch my children grow up in this time, we weren't prepared that when we got our son a cell phone for the first time, we thought about it. It would be great because now he's out and about. You know, I think he was 14 at the time.
Yeah.
He had an accident, and we were feeling nervous, and we wanted more connection with him. And so we got him a cell phone for the first time. And suddenly the phones in the kitchen stopped ringing for him. Yeah. We didn't realize. We didn't think. We couldn't have known. We'd never. So he unplugged from the family in that way. We didn't know who was calling him, when they were talking to him. New rules had to be in place. Sometimes they were broken. Sometimes they were misunderstood.
Yeah.
So, and now we have 18, 16, and 14-year-old children. And we deal with this technology thing every day.
Yeah.
It's disconcerting, to say the least.
Yeah.
Christine, what about you? I know you've got a lot of thoughts about this.
Well, we could cover so many things. I mean, even Ed's comments were so broad and general. Mm-hmm. We could talk about Twitter, or we could talk about the news
and what
we do with the information that we have. Like Aaron was talking about, sometimes I declare a news fast for myself because I love information, partially because I think it gives me power, but also because it gives me a sense of what I can pray for.
Yeah.
But it also definitely preys on my propensity to fear.
Yes.
It preys on my propensity to fear. Yeah. So, but I would be descriptive in saying that if I pull up to my child's friend's house, and I want to tell my child it's time to come out, we're going home, my temptation is to do a quick text to their phone directly to them. I don't have to exchange any words with the parents in the house. I don't have to get out of the car, walk up, and greet the person. But what I would do instead, what I hope to do instead and have done, is get out of the car,
right?
Go say hello to the other child's parents, have a conversation, spend the time.
Yes.
And then before, and it's so easy to just do the technologically quick thing. Mm-hmm. And it keeps us very, it creates less community. It actually separates us more. And that's, in my prescriptive sense, I would encourage parents to, be aware of what's going on in the technology, even for themselves, how they're letting it take away some of the personal parts of life.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, I've heard people say we're the most connected but yet disconnected society ever.
Yeah.
Exactly that. The whole dropping the kids off and, hey, come outside, or picking them up. That hit me big time. I feel kind of guilty, actually, about a few things,
Well, I mean, the Samson Society, I mean, one of the reasons we're in this room and speaking with Aaron, I mean, and so many people are listening, is that one of the basic tenets is that isolation is killing us.
Yes.
So we come out of isolation, and we drag our broken stuff out into the light, and we begin to look at it. And so, I mean, this ties right into, technology is isolating, It's for me. It's my personal communication device. I've got it right next to me.
Yeah,
I've got my personal screen. I mean, at any given moment, there's three screens going in the house. We're not together. We're isolated.
Yes.
And what fascinates me is, how do you guys feel when you lose your phone? You can't find it, or your computer breaks down.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's like the world has ended for me.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
exactly.
Which shows me how connected we are, not to people, but to these devices. Aaron?
I wish we could put it through the same paradigm that the Amish. I heard an Amish elder speaking once, and he was being challenged on the inconsistent use of technology in their community. Uh-huh. You don't have cars, but you'll use an engine on a horse-drawn whatever to do farming. And there was a tone of ridicule in the interviewer's voice. And the elder simply looked at him and said, "Oh, it's very simple. We look at how technology affects community. So if technology speeds up a process so that a man cannot work with his son at his side, or a grandfather can't keep up with his grandson, then that technology is inappropriate for our community. We'll use any technology as long as it doesn't rob us of community. So when you get done with work, you go to a bar to hang out with your friends. We don't need to. We hung out with our friends all day. We go home to be with our families." So I think if we put technology through that grid, how is it robbing us or giving us community? We'd probably be in a pretty good place.
Yeah.
All right. Woo! Well, it's almost time for the big interview. Now,
yes.
The formal interview with Scott and Christine. Before we go there, you guys just completed a recording project, didn't you? Your first in a while?
Yes, we did. Do you want to hear about it?
Yeah.
It's called Voyage, and I actually wrote 10 songs based on this old Puritan prayer book called The Valley of Vision.
Oh, I love that book.
Yeah, and it took me a while to really love that book because of the these and the thous and some of the themes that are just so archaic.
Mm.
And yet, as I kind of chewed on it like a good classical novel, the language became more part of what I could understand. And so I thought, how cool would it be to turn some of these prayers, or at least some of these ideas, into some pop songs that I like.
Yeah.
So Puritan prayer pop songs.
That's right.
There you go.
Right. Well, so
which one do you want to play for us?
I want to play the title track, Voyage, actually.
Tell us a little about the song.
I want Christine to.
Well, there is a prayer in the book about just the fear of travel by ship, by boat. And, you know, I guess in those days, whenever they were 18th century, 17th century, the fear was the waves, the tossing, and the, you know, unpredictability of the weather. And I thought, well, contemporary to us is the traveling by airplane.
Mm.
And so it's just about, you know, praying to the Lord of the air, you know, to keep us safe. And also it's a great metaphor for the turbulence of life and how we're often swept away by the fears of life, and how we need the Lord to calm our struggles, pour his oil upon our troubled skies.
Okay. Well,
my favorite lyric from this song, it's a convert my every care to prayer, convince my heart you're really there. And may this day
May the world this day
be glad that I'm alive. And I just that sends my hands up, and I'm not even a hands up kind of guy.
All right. Well, here it is. Voyage.
Grant that Jesus may be at the wheel to guide me safely in. Let no curse be wrecked with turbulence. Bring me to the gate unscathed. This voyage is long, and the stormy clouds are pitiless, but your word is secure. Grant me grace to
back on the Pirate Monk podcast. Isn't this fun?
Aaron, having Scott and Christine here with us?
I'm loving it.
Because they've been hanging around Samson Land for years.
Samson
Scott
Land.
Scott is a grizzled pirate monk. Really has created contributed a ton to Samson culture and just been a huge help and inspiration. And Christine has been an enormous part of this community as well.
I'm remembering back to the first time I met Scott when you and the 21 or so pirate monks flew all the way out to California and did the all-day seminar to less guys than came over from Tennessee.
Yeah, that's right. We outnumbered you guys in the all-day workshop.
And when I think back about that, I mean, we were so excited about what we were doing, and it wasn't about coming out to show you how to do community. We just wanted to show somebody how we were doing it.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And that was a wonderful trip.
Yeah. well, just for the sake of those members of the listening audience who might not know you guys, let's back up just a little bit and a little bit of your story. Now, Christine, you grew up in Amish country, didn't you?
I actually did.
Uh-huh. And I think you were dismissed as Amish.
I was from Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And I went to college in Boston where I met Scott.
Mm-hmm.
And someone told him not to bother with me because I was Amish.
And I just thought, well, where does she park the horse and buggy? out on Mass Ave. That seems to be so strange for her.
And Scott, you were not a Christian at the time.
I was not. Mm. No, I was just looking for hot Amish girls.
As we all were.
Something about the bonnet.
How did you grow up? I was not. I grew up in the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
My mom actually became a strong believer. She had a Jesus experience in the 70s. And I went as far... The quick story is I went as far the other way. I was like a hippie kid who got interested in Eastern religions.
Yeah.
And by the time I got up to Boston, it was just... You know, my religion was sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yeah.
And met Christine. She was actually dating my roommate at the time, who I informed her was really just interested in notching his bedpost.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I kind of warned her off of him, and she kind of looked at me like, okay, really?
Yeah.
Is this just another? I'm like, no, I'm really, because I was scared of her, because her nickname on campus was Sister Christian, which was a popular song at the time by a group called Night Ranger. And she actually liked that. You liked that nickname, didn't you?
Well, I did operate a little bit out of the appearance of being a good little girl, as opposed to the inward transformation that I didn't realize I was actually seeking.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, well said. And I was just full-blown pirate.
Yeah.
No monk involved.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I was also good at, not good at, but I wanted to be a missionary dater.
Oh.
So I did a lot of missionary dating.
So I was the final project. And, man, you know, not to, obviously, the king of the universe at that point reached in and told me he'd had enough with the way I was living my life.
Wow.
And, had just an amazing experience, amazing season. Tricky season. Missionary dating is very tricky to redeem.
Yeah, yeah.
But God can redeem anything, and he redeemed the likes of me. And we married in 87. After my experience with C.S. Lewis, Amy Grant, Christine.
Wow.
Some wonderful, you know, people, real community that I finally saw what real Christianity was about.
Yeah.
Read the Gospels and was really angry at one point because I grew up in the Catholic Church and didn't know the Gospel, which was strange to me.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm okay with it now. I'm over that anger.
Yeah.
And so we married in 87, moved to Nashville, told everybody that would listen that we were going to write songs together and have a career together. They scoffed and said, oh, you won't do that. It'll never work. You'll end up doing separate things musically. And came down here to Nashville and began meeting people and writing songs and waiting tables, which is the only thing that a music degree is good for.
Houston's, right?
Yeah. And mm-hmm. TGI Fridays, I had all the flair.
Did you really?
Oh, gosh, it was horrible. Yeah.
I wouldn't give for a photograph from those
I still
days.
Had a mullet at that point.
Wow.
Yeah.
A mullet, yeah. A striped shirt, and flair.
Yeah. I did the Houstons, too.
Did you really?
I sure did.
Oh, my.
Mondo worked at the Houstons as well.
Yeah. Okay.
Thankfully, we didn't have to slug it out for too many years. We got to sign a record deal pretty early. And Scott and I have been able to make music. Like, for the next 15 years, we worked together on the road, in the studio, mm-hmm. at home, as we were raising our three kids as yeah. well.
So the timetable kind of became make a record, go on the road, have a baby,
yeah,
make wow. a record, figure out how to take a baby on the road, mm-hmm. tour, have another baby. Oh my gosh, we can't do this. Mm-hmm. Make another record. And so honestly, the 90s are a bit of a blur because mm-hmm. we did that. So we traveled constantly for about 12 or 13 years.
Wow.
Seems like we always had a bag packed one way or another. And mm-hmm. we don't travel that much anymore. We still make music. I do a lot of production. I've got a great production partner, Ken Lewis, and we do stuff for television now, and so we're still making music as a living. It's tricky,
yeah,
but it's all tricky.
Yeah. Now, coming off the road was not unrelated to concern about your family, right? You wanted was it family considerations? And because you guys are homeschoolers, were you homeschooling on the road? How'd you do that thing?
Oh yeah, it was pretty natural outgrowth of. Just being together all the time.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't really so much a family consideration. It was all about me. I got sick of traveling.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't just that, but I think, you know, it ran its course for us as yeah. we were getting older, and the kids actually do need more stability as they get older.
Yes.
And more consistency with friends that they have and organizations they want to be involved in.
Right.
That was definitely consideration.
And what we found as well was, I mean, the way we would talk about it is we'd come off the road and we'd want to close the blinds and turn on the answering machine. We were done with people.
Yeah.
Because people always wanted something from us.
Right.
And, you know, we joke about it. You know, we never really, you know, we never did Stephen Curtis Chapman numbers or anything. But in the mid-90s, people wanted something from us all the time.
Right.
I mean, there was a lot of radio success. There was a lot of... And we were in demand, and we're actually homebodies.
Yeah.
We don't really travel all that well. Uh-huh. And we did it for a long time.
Right.
And we had to figure out how to do it with children. It was a lot. So when we came home, we were done.
Yeah.
And we're a very nice little self-contained unit. We like each other.
Mm-hmm.
We like spending time with each other. So community was a bit foreign to us.
Yeah. I've heard you use the phrase, circle the wagons.
Mm-hmm.
You take your family seriously. Right. Yeah, so here's what I'm interested in hearing you talk about is, how does this, you guys have got a good, strong family, you're very attentive parents, you got great kids, of course, all the struggles and strains that accompany, you know, growing up in any family,
mm-hmm.
But you guys do it as well as anybody I know. How do you integrate that with community? Because Scott, you're very active with guys. Christine, you're very active with women, and you know, you're in a larger community of other couples. How do you make that happen? And is it important to make it happen?
For me, I realized it was becoming more and more important for me to get outside of my own head and my own world of trying to figure things out on my own. Just, you know, all I needed as a younger woman was a great book on theology, mm-hmm. a good cup of coffee, mm-hmm. and a couple hours of quiet.
Yeah, yeah.
And that stopped working for me.
Mm.
And Scott was already, he's already a lot more extroverted, I should say, and he gets a lot of energy from being with people.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's not necessarily having the deep conversations that we need to have with people.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I wasn't having the deep conversations either, because I was happy to be at home and having those conversations with myself in my head. So for me, I was running out of steam because I wasn't interacting with people, because it doesn't come naturally to me.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't naturally call up a friend on the phone. I just don't like the telephone.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I actually began to force myself to become more involved in mm-hmm. community, go to Bible studies.
Mm-hmm.
And began to learn the language of trying to find out what exactly I was feeling and dealing with, and put it into words that made sense and communicated to other women.
Mm.
And, I mean, I don't know if you want to talk about that yet, but just
sure.
the beginning of the Samson Sisterhood
yeah.
for me was a huge opening of new horizons
yeah.
of communication,
yeah.
of honesty,
yeah.
confession
yeah.
that I'd never experienced.
And even though the local Samson Sisterhood is no longer operable, I don't think it is. I don't know that they're meeting now. That was a doorway for you into community with women, right?
Yes, I think a lot of my friends and I discovered that we had to, we were actually less typical women than, you know, the world would expect us to be, always chatting and gossiping.
Yeah.
Maybe that is what women do best, and not really getting to the heart of the matter in our own hearts. Mm. So Samson Sisterhood was a way for me and for us to tell each other the truth in a safe setting.
Yeah.
And not have advice given back to us about what we should be doing or shouldn't mm-hmm. be doing, and not have to come up with advice for what we heard our sister struggling with.
Yeah.
There's a huge freedom in that as part of the Samson Society, is not having to come up with the answers.
Yeah. 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 Aaron.
I guess I'm curious, being married to a quiet, kind, shy woman, and she being married to an extroverted, inappropriate man, so it's a very similar kind of situation with you. I know that first step you just described, that you were totally, you know, happy and set in isolation, but there was something missing. Taking that first step must have been really difficult. So I guess I'm curious, what were you surprised about what happened or changed or what you experienced that you never could have expected when you were still in isolation?
I think the discovery that I wasn't very different from many other women, and my struggles and ideas and worries were very similar with my sisters.
And did you find that invigorating at all, or was it just a pure drain to your kind of quiet personality?
I want to know, is there an agenda behind this question? You know, you.
Yeah, I'll have my wife listen to this afterwards. So I'm hoping if you'd like to add the word Jenny to any of your answers, that would be fine.
Because Scott was meeting with the Samson Pirate Monks quite a while before I ever ventured out into that territory. And he would come home and he would be filled with just the energy of having participated in these groups, of, you know, where they would just tell the truth to each other and hear each other out. And for me, it was invigorating because he does love to speak and he does love to get response. And I'm not always up to that for him. And so for him to be with the men, with new friends, with real friends, getting responses and being able to pour out everything that's going on in his heart was invigorating to me and to our relationship. Because now it was not just me
yeah.
being his best friend. He had a lot of friends.
Mm.
I have, however, had women friends say they were jealous of their husbands who were involved with the Samson Society, because they felt that the energy that was due them in their relationship was being taken outside the home. Now, as far as addressing women who would rather just stay at home and not have to interact or not be pushed to interact, I would caution any husband who's it's working for him to not push too hard.
Yes.
What's her name?
Jenny.
Not push Jenny too hard to become what you may be projecting she should be doing if she doesn't, if that may not be her thing.
All in good time.
Oh,
that's great.
Yeah, thanks, Christine. That's what I was looking for. Thank you very much.
And put another way, Aaron, had I been pushed, and Scott did start to push a little bit, you know, human nature, you kind of push back the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Doesn't always work the way you
want
it to.
Well, that's human nature, or is that your nature?
My human nature.
Allie's wired the same way.
Well, I want to just jump in here just a second and speak to the history of this, because one of the things for me as in our marriage, early on especially, I mean, I told the tiniest bit of our story that was, it's obvious that Christine was a huge part of my becoming a Christian. I mean, in essence, she led me to Christ in so many ways. And so for then, early on in our marriage, I mean, maybe even into 10, 15 years, how does someone like me then become the spiritual leader in my household? It started off where Christine was the spiritual lead. She led me. She was the leader.
Yeah.
She's also, as she said, good theology book, a cup of coffee. I'm good with the cup of coffee, but I get about 30 pages in, and I'm like, all right, really? Augustine's Confessions? Nah. You know? I got a guitar magazine, and anyway, I'm dumbing myself down here a little bit. I love literature. I love to read, but we're wired very differently that way. And so how do I become the spiritual leader in the household where we've got this woman who's interested in theology, she's got, you know, 10-year jump start on me and everything. And so that was very troubling, I think, to both of us, you know, to have this kind of tension in the home. And what I found was, as I moved out into community, and as I did come home, you know, so energized, sometimes weeping about, you know, what was going on for me in the first year of my Samson experience, what I found was that was actually how I was going to become the spiritual leader in my home. I was going to lead my family by being in community,
yes.
And eventually... I mean, this is not me taking credit, but eventually leading my wife into community, and I do remember, you know, I don't know if I pushed, but I was very excited at the proposal of a Samson sisterhood. I remember that, and so I think I did fairly well in the pushing, you know, in the not pushing department. But to me, that's tangible evidence for me of how I eventually became or am becoming a spiritual leader in our home. So if you could push back to that or agree or disagree, I mean, it's a conversation.
Oh, no, I wouldn't push back to that at all. That's definitely true. Sorry for my squeaky chair here. I think that there's so much freedom in watching my husband become who the Lord wants him to be that it's more natural that if I see real change... that's when I start to want to change.
Yeah. I mean, because it's like, for, you know, like I said earlier in the response to the letter, don't tell me.
Yeah.
Show me.
Yeah.
You tell me so many things. Yeah. I tell my wife so many things. And the thing about when Chris was saying, you know, what other women have told her, well, my husband's given that energy away.
Yeah.
And then he's not. Well, I mean, I can say for us, I've got. In terms of that, I've got plenty for those guys, and I've got plenty still to bring home to her. I mean, I'm a pain in the butt, you know. I want so much reaction from my wife, you know. So,
well, hey Nate, should we take a break or press on? Because I've got a question, but is it time to take a little break?
All right, well then let's play an old Out of the Gray song that follows along these lines.
And this one's my favorite. Of all the Out of the Gray songs.
Oh, then you can introduce it.
It's that one about community, and here it is.
This is called All We Need.
In the name of love, God is reaching down to us. Through the human touch, something we all need so encircling the saints. All we need is to reach out to touch all these open hands in front of us. All we need is to hold out
Well, Scott and Christine, it has been so great to have you here. I can't believe the time has flown. It's already time for us to wrap up this episode of the podcast. Before we go, though, how can our listeners find you guys? How can they contact you? How can they get the new project?
The new project is on my website. We have christinedente.net. Is that right?
And yeah.
We are sending out autographed copies for those who want them.
Nice.
The Voyage CD. And if you really don't want to have the hard copy, you can go ahead to iTunes and you can download it there as well.
Or you can contact Aaron in California and he'll burn you a copy.
All
half
right.
Price. That's
well,
right.
And then our children won't go to college.
There it is. Until next week, this has been Nate Larkin, Mondo Grimes, Aaron Porter. We'll see you next week here on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Recovery. Say whoa. Say whoa. Recovery. You see, there is no shame in living.
For real.
Even if your back's against the wall.